Since 2011, American Giant has been making everyday clothing with extraordinary effort. Not in far-off factories, but right here in the USA. We obsess over fabrics, fit, and details, because if you're going to wear it every day, it should feel great and last for years. From the cut of a hoodie to the finishing of a seam, nothing is overlooked. Our supply chain is tight-knit and local, which means less crisscrossing the country and more care in every step. The result is durable clothing, t-shirts, hoodies, sweatpants, and denim that become part of your life season after season. This isn't fast fashion, it's clothing made with purpose by people who care as much about how it's made as how it fits. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. My colleague and co-host, Bill Roger of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracy, keeps the Long War Journal. And on the Long War Journal right now, you will see the byline of Seth Frantzman, also of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracy and the war correspondent for the Jerusalem Post. We turn to the north of Israel, a threat since October 8th, Hezbollah with its missiles and rockets and drones peppering the north, forcing evacuation of up to 100,000 people, and that continues. The IDF deployed, looking for the threat from Hezbollah, far more serious than anything the Gazan Hamas could mount, because the numbers and the missiles and the depth of the arsenal running to Beirut. However, within these last days, a rocket missile fired by Hezbollah landed in a soccer field in a village associated with the Druze, Majd al-Shams. And we welcome Seth now because the geography here is important, and also the relationship between the Druze village in the northern north part of Israel, abutting both Lebanon and Syria. Seth, a very good evening to you. Thank you for joining us. We have at least a dozen dead, several seriously wounded from the attack against the Druze in Majd al-Shams. Is this something that was logically to expect, to aim a missile at this village, or does this look like an errant missile? Not that that's a profound difference. I'm just puzzling about, is this a Hezbollah provocation? Well, IDF, what are you going to do about it? Good evening to you, Seth.
Good evening. I mean, there's certainly different options that could have, or things that could have happened, scenarios. One is that Hezbollah had been firing a lot recently at the Golan. So they've been using drones and missiles fired over to the Golan and targeting mostly what they claim to be targeting military installations, because the Golan is, you know, festooned with Israeli military bases. So it could be that they were trying to target some sort of a base, and the rocket, which is an Iranian style or design rocket, went off course or malfunctioned or something and slammed into this town. It could be also, and this would be maybe even more cynical of Hezbollah, that they decided to target a Druze town, because the Druze that live in Majd al-Shams are a minority group. They live in the Golan, but maybe Hezbollah thought they could get away with targeting this minority group, because if they harmed a few of them, it would somehow weigh differently in terms of Israel's response. That would be another scenario. I mean, the missile landed smack dab in the center of this town of 12,000 people, and it landed in a soccer field. So you could argue that Hezbollah targeted a field thinking there'd be no one in it, or at the worst end of that is that they purposely targeted this field and sought to kill as many people as possible, because This was the worst death toll in any day of fighting on the northern front since Hezbollah began its attacks. Is 12 dead, some intensive care, and something like 40 to 60 injured. It's a huge toll, and they're all children, children or teens.
Who are the Druze, Seth? What is the difference between the Druze and other people on the Golan?
So the Druze are a minority group that lives throughout the Middle East, mostly in Israel, Syria, and Lebanon. There's hundreds of thousands spread out over these three countries. And they are a group that speaks Arabic, but they are a religious minority. They keep their religion very secret. They're not Muslims, but they have this this unique status. They have a status in each country that's different. But in each country, they serve in the military. And in each one, for instance, in Syria, they've tended to be a bit more supportive of the regime than some other groups. In Israel, they are drafted to the IDF, unlike, you know, Muslim or Christian Arabs who are not drafted. However, the Druze and the Golan, it's important to note, there are today, I don't know, 20,000 or something like that, Druze and the Golan. They were Syrian citizens in 1967 when Israel conquered the Golan. They remained Syrian citizens. In 1982, when Israel annexed the Golan, they were given the option for Israeli ID cards and citizenship. Not all of them have taken advantage of that. And when it comes to municipal elections, very few of them, or not so many of them, vote. So it's worth noting that their status is a bit different than the Druze that live within Israel. And therefore, you know, it's not fair to call them supporters necessarily of Syria or Israel, but they have a very complex identity because they know 20 years ago, Israel was in talks with Syria to give back the Golan. So if they decide to be, you know, super Israeli and then the Golan is given back, they would be in a strange situation. But after the Syrian civil war, I think most of the Druze in the Golan don't want to live under the Syrian regime. I mean, why would you?
Bill, you have a question.
Yes, Seth, I think you've touched on this a little bit here, but perhaps expand upon it. So while Prime Minister Netanyahu visited the site and was met by angry protesters, they called him a war criminal and a murderer. Why would he encounter such a response when Hezbollah was the one that carried out this attack and killed and maimed and wounded those children?
Well, I don't know if those protests we saw representative of everyone there, or it was just, as you know, some provocation or what have you. I mean, certainly the Druze and the Golan, as I said, remember, they're different than the ones in Israel. Even the Druze in Israel are not necessarily all supportive, or wouldn't be all supportive of the government of Israel in terms of the ruling coalition. Because just remember, they vote in a democracy. They have their own views. The Druze tend to feel that the right-wing government or more far-right government have been pushing a nation-state law in Israel that kind of doesn't give them as equal rights as they'd like and things. So, you know, they have their own political views, and they probably feel that they got the more right-wing parties within Netanyahu's coalition are not representative of them. But again, that's complicated. I would say in general, you know, that was not the reception that everyone else got there, because the chief of the staff of the IDF was not received negatively when he visited. And neither was the defense minister's calls. Many of them spoke with the Druze sheikhs and religious leaders. So I think it's important to clarify that when it came to Israeli officials coming to Majdal Shams, there were a bunch of Israeli generals and officials who were welcomed. And there were maybe some that were met with different responses. And that's just domestic politics. But I think obviously the Druze there are angry that this happened. They've lost 12 children. It's the worst massacre of Druze, I think, probably in all of Israel's history. So they are not happy with Hezbollah. And we've seen the Hezbollah is denying they did it, because Hezbollah is very afraid of the Druze reaction in Lebanon. There have even been calls, I think, by Druze sheikhs speaking with Bashar al-Assad, the regime leader in Syria, expressing condolences for this, because the Druze are technically Syrians as well. So it's a very complicated situation.
We have reason to believe the IDF is preparing a response. Your article yesterday indicated they were meeting about it. There was a vast table in which they're discussing their options. However, for some time, we've talked to you, Seth, about the deployment in the north. It's not about proportionate response. It's about clearing Hezbollah back across the Litani River. We've been watching the Gaza situation, thinking when that's secure, or at least in a place where the IDF doesn't need major units, they've got to turn north, since keeping up to 100,000 Israeli citizens out of their homes is not acceptable. So does this incident in any way shape or change the planning of the IDF? Or I'm noting that they can respond to drones. With drones, they can strike individuals. But is that adequate to the provocation?
Well, I think killing 12, you know, people or children in most countries would spark a war. The thing is that in Israel, unfortunately, there have been now 6,000 or 7,000 Hezbollah rockets and drones launched to Israel, and there have been casualties over the last 10 months. Israel has kind of allowed this to become a new normal and has not found a way to extricate itself from this strange kind of war of attrition. And I will note that after this mass killing, what I heard in Israel on the radio, let's say, which reflects perhaps probably more centrist stance, is that Israel wants to respond strongly and avoid war, which kind of creates a very strange parameter where you have a lot of tough talk from politicians, but the overall assessment of the IDF, I guess, is give us a response that will, you know, take out some senior Hezbollah people or maybe show off what Israel could do, like it did in Hodeidah in Yemen, you know, take down a building in Beirut, but a building with no one in it or something. I mean, but again, that kind of tit-for-tat thing is just what the weird equation that we're in. And Hezbollah openly says, this is an equation. That's not usually how wars are won, I think, generally. So it's difficult. But look, as you know, Israel has been in 10 months of war. The Israeli population doesn't probably want another 10 months of war, I think. So there's a lot of weird things that are happening. We know that the defense minister wanted to go to war against Hezbollah like on October 11th, right when the war started. And he was told to kind of stop or stand down or not proceed. So Israel chose to do the Gaza front first. But that front is still happening. And it has always then postponed the northern front, even though the IDF has the forces to do it. And the guys have been training nonstop for 10 months.
Bill, you have a quick question.
Yes, Seth, is there any indication that the Biden administration is attempting to slow down the Israelis to prevent escalation? The administration has really made a lot of efforts to not have the war widen. I would argue it already has widened with the Houthis and the militias. But are we seeing the Biden administration pressing the government? And what has the Netanyahu government's response been?
So we've heard that kind of thing about from the Biden administration will somehow have a peace or a ceasefire on the northern border, on the blue line, and that there should be, they don't want to have much more than a limited retaliation or de-escalation. We're hearing that, I think, generally from the U.S. and the West. So, yeah, they don't want to have a widened war. They don't think that should happen, which means Hezbollah is basically preserved. Not only in the Hezbollah today is not that different than Hezbollah on October 6th. It's lost 300 guys, but you can replace some of them. In terms of capabilities, Hezbollah has all the capabilities it used to have. So that would mean just preserving it in the way it is. Israel's leaders have not pushed back on that much because my sense is most of Israel's leadership also doesn't want a huge expanded war in the north. I mean, because everyone thinks it would be a disastrous war, because the theory in Israel is Hezbollah is stronger than Hamas and it can cause havoc in Israel. The airports will be shut. The Hezbollah has talked about targeting the energy grid. I mean, we've seen Hezbollah, for instance, flying drones over lots of sensitive sites in the north, like military sites, defense industry, air bases, Hezbollah is sending a message that it can decimate northern Israel, even if Israel wins. I mean, which is kind of like a mutually assured destruction type of scenario. So that's kind of where we are. And I think, yeah, the messaging from the West would be to tell Israel to basically not respond much. And that's where we are.
We're speaking with Seth Frantzman of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracy and the Jerusalem Post, Bill Raggio, my colleague and co-host. We're going to Gaza. I'm John Bash.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.